This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This episode of the KMP Show is brought to you by Mack Weldon. That's right, they're back, baby, and better than ever. And right now, go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your order using our special promo code KP. That's right, this is exclusive to the KMP Show. Go to MackWeldon.com right now and get 20% off using your promo code, our promo code, but it'll be your promo code too. KP at MackWeldon.com. Get yourself 20% off. Mack Weldon is better than whatever you're wearing right now. I suggest the boxer briefs. I was checking that out, and they look like a very serious, a very nice product that you want to get yourself into. You want to get you and your junk into some Mack Weldon. So go do that.
Absolutely,
right now.
Yes.
Mack Weldon.
My dog is also agreeing that
he is shouting. Yeah. He heard. He was like, they've got super good hearing. And it's like, Mack Weldon? Hell yeah. If I had balls, I'd want them put into...
If you didn't chop them off, I would be wearing those. But you did, so thank you.
But I'm sure your dogs would be Mack Weldon customers. And
here, absolutely.
The great thing, they're perfect for whatever you're going to do. You work out, great. Mack Weldon's got you covered. Their silver line is antimicrobial. What does that mean? No odor. It eliminates odor. Who doesn't hate the smell of ball funk? Everybody, every guy out here, listen, guys, come on. We all know. After, you know, you go to the gym, but you're like in that in between, like, should I shower? Or maybe you're at the end of a long workout or basketball session, whatever it may be. And you sit down, you're drinking some water, tying your shoes, and you get a whiff. What do you get a whiff of? Ball funk.
Good.
It's awful. It's terrible. Like, you're like, what's wrong with me? What, am I dying? I don't know.
Is this death? Is this what that?
Is this what it smells like when you die? But Mack Weldon, you won't know that you're dying because of their silver line antimicrobial fabric.
I can test this too. Not to interrupt you, but you know, if that's not a thing for you, if you go, hey, you know, I smell great down there all the time, always, whatever underwear I have, and the underwear you have is stupid and it's terrible and it's awful and you should get Mack Weldon stuff, but whatever, if you're very like set on your crappy, you know, I bought, you know, for $2, I got 15 pairs of underwear at Walmart and I really love that. Okay, fine. That's you. You do you. You're wrong. You're absolutely a bad person, but that's you. That's you. But I can tell you, man, I bought a polo shirt on there because I'd been talking about this underwear and it's all been underwear. It's been underwear, underwear, underwear. That's all I've tried. That's all we've really kind of talked about. And I said, hey, you know what? I'm going to splurge. I'm going to get myself one of these polo shirts.
Mm-hmm.
I came home the other day. And my wife, I walked in and she goes, wow, you look handsome. And I can tell you, I can count on my hand the times that has been said to me ever.
Right.
particularly post-marriage, it's very few. I can honestly say maybe twice.
Uh-huh.
And this is one of them. She goes, where'd you get that polo from? And she was like grilling me on this. And I was like, where do you think? I'm not going to tell you. And she couldn't get it. She, okay, Gap, Express, where'd you go? What did you do without me knowing that you did this? And I said, Mack Weldon, baby.
There it is.
I use that promo code. I use that KP promo code, 20% off. We're in this nice polo. So it's called the Vesper Polo. It's good. The shopping experience is awesome, too. You go on there. It's simple. And that's the thing that I've been telling a lot of people when they ask about Mack Weldon. I say, you go onto that website, and you don't have to sift through 75 different types of underwear, 75 different types of polos. Do I want this? Do I want that? You click on there, you go polo shirt, and it goes, okay, here's our polo shirt. It's good. We know it's good. That's it.
Yep.
The end. What color do you want? You say, red. And they go, okay, cool. You got a red polo shirt coming. And that's it. That's it. Done. You're 10 minutes in and out.
There you go.
Done.
And you know what? If I may, and I was looking at their products, there's a design feature on their boxer briefs that I'm a big fan of because, you know, boxer brief, it's the best of both worlds. It's like hot ice. But
I'm wearing them now, so I'm going to look down at them while you talk.
Good.
So I can,
yes.
Okay. Right.
Well, thank you for letting us know that you're not wearing pants.
Yes.
But there's a problem with many boxer briefs out there on the market is that they retain the button that's common with boxers.
Oh, get the button out of here.
Exactly. And get it's them. Like, okay, because every guy
stupid
has to make a choice. Do you leave the button or do you keep it open? Do you default to open button? Because listen, when I'm at a bar, all right, and I'm drinking, you know, like I'm six beers deep or whatever. Really, I don't drink that much. Sometimes. But, you know, I don't have time to go, like I slunt saunter off to the bathroom and I can't like play the game of like, oh, I got to get the button undone. Or it's like, well, do you know, is this big enough that I can make it through the top or the bottom where the button fastens in the middle? No, you don't want to play that game. Mack Weldon on their boxer briefs, it's like the briefs. It's the little fold, the elastic things that crisscross. No, they're not worn backwards. They're normal wearing. And you just peel them open, bam, do your business, put them right back. You don't have to worry about, you know, because then if you default to open, like if you're just, you can't walk around in your underwear because then your junk's hanging out because the fly is wide open. So they ditched the button and I couldn't be happier with the design. I encourage everybody to go check it out. Great design stuff, Mack Weldon, and antimicrobial, because I have been a victim of ball funk. It's awful. And I'm on a campaign to rid the world of ball funk.
Eliminate it.
Yeah. And so is Mack Weldon. So you won't know if you're dying. But anyway, we got a lot to talk about on the K&P show here, episode number 24. I am your host, John Playtech, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Mr. Rich Craich. Hello, sir. How are you? I'm good. I'm okay. Could be better.
Why just okay? What's wrong?
If we can diverge from the run sheet for a little bit.
No, we cannot.
If
it's not on there, if you're not upset about one of the five topics we've listed, then I don't know. I don't really care what you're upset about.
We've spent 10 minutes on underwear already. So
that's on the run sheet, though.
That is. Yeah, it's like talk for 10 minutes. But I never realized I'm in talks with a few stations around the country to go get a gig in radio. And I'm trying to get like... trying to garner interest because I think I've got talent a little bit. Rich, right? This is where you say, yeah, you do. You're really good. This is a great K&P show. Okay, you know what? I was going to call you handsome, but now you just...
I don't like lying to our listeners, so it's not. It's just I feel weird doing that. But no, I'm joking. Of course, yeah. It's supremely talented. No, absolutely
right. Like basically,
any radio station in the world would be happy to have you.
And I've
except New York.
I'm
they're good.
Yeah, I think they got enough.
They got friends, so they're good.
And
so.
I've realized that there's a lot of people that are just they supremely enjoy being mired in mediocrity, because I'll tell you know talking to a program director, it's like, hey, you know, why don't I bring my show or something I can do to you, like bring it to your airwaves, because you know you got competition in town, whether it's another station or two other stations, whatever, that are similar format. And I look at the ratings and it's like, okay, well, you're doing like a one share in a top 50 market on PPM, and they're just like, yeah, we're good.
Yeah, like, why don't you try something different?
Yeah,
maybe.
Why don't you just like, why don't you ditch one of the 50 plus year old white men in your lineup for a 29 year old white man? But
but still,
I got 12 years, 21 years. Yeah, 21 years to
it's
go.
It's not a math show. Thankfully, it's a sports show that you're looking for, not a math show or a finance show. So,
how much you got left on your mortgage? I don't know. It's a 30-year mortgage. It's been 5 years. I don't know. Man, you can pay that off in the next 6 months, right? Something like that? I don't know. But it just, see, they're just like, no, we're good. And I just, you know, and it's not about any specific person or any specific station, but people, radio is dying. Why is radio dying? Radio isn't dying because of podcasting. It isn't helping, that's for sure. But a lot of radio is dying because you've got these guys, these program directors who are holding on for dear life, and they are so scared to try anything new. They don't want to try it. They don't want to try somebody that's bucked the system, that short circuits the pay your dues system.
You didn't go through the internships. You didn't do that sort of stuff. Right. You didn't work for free for 5 years for nothing. Yeah, right.
And it's like, hey, you know, I had a YouTube subscriber base that's probably bigger than your market share right now. But they're so scared to try anything new. And it's like, well, I know these guys are safe because they've been in the business for 20 years and I know what I'm getting with them. I know day in and day out what kind of product they're going to put on my airwaves. And then don't cry that radio is dying or being killed by podcasts when you don't want to try something new. when you don't want to be like, hey, you know, I give SiriusXM all the credit in the world. They brought on Jenna Marbles and gave her a primetime show on Sirius, on one of their big networks. And Jenna Marbles is a YouTuber, to my knowledge, has no radio experience, but they're like, hey, you come on up.
Yeah, you can build an audience. You can build an audience. It doesn't really matter anymore. Like And that's like, I think that's a big thing of podcasts in general. And I don't even think that we necessarily are like a bastion of that, but like there's shows for everything. There is literally a show, and people take these risks, and you don't know what's going to work out. You don't know what's going to become a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like when Joe and I in Voices of Wrestling decided, hey, let's just do this thing and let's focus on like some weird parts of wrestling. Let's talk a lot about Japanese. You know what I mean? Nobody would have ever said, yeah, cool. That sounds great. You just got to do it. And then you build it. But people are so weird about like, they just don't understand that a lot of it is the personalities of the people. That's what's going to drive the people. And if you're a good personality, regardless of your content, regardless of what you are, whatever you do, that's the part that drives people there.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can talk about whatever, but if you're not a good personality, no one's going to want to listen to you. But that's
right.
It's, you know, you can know everything about everything, but if you don't have and obviously, yeah, the people would rather have just bumbling white guys, you know.
Yeah. And the problem is, it's like, I know I can help you do better. I know I can. I know it in my bones to my core. I know I can get you better. I know I can generate intrigue. I know I can attack people sideways and they'll go, whoa, hey, how's it going? What is this? Because it's not going to be the same milquetoast, paint by numbers, talk radio, hot talk radio, or sports talk radio. But, you know, it's a lot of people wondered why are we mired in mediocrity? Why are we doing poorly? It's like, well, because you haven't done anything different in 25 years. You've had the same sports talk format, the same personalities, and they're not doing it for you anymore. Because you know what? You know who has the power to create a kick-ass freaking podcast? Radio stations. Because they have the studios, they have the equipment, they have pick any station in any market in the world or in the United States, and you could hand the keys to that studio to a podcast team. Pick any podcast you like. It could be the KMP show, could be Voices of Wrestling, could be Shake Them Ropes, whatever. You give them a phone number with a switchboard, you give them call screening, and they will have an infinitely better podcast than what they're able to do right now. But right. Nobody wants
and
to
guess
try
what
it.
You can also make it a podcast, because you know, yeah, like afterwards, uh-huh, people can listen to it, like,
right.
It's really strange how that can
and
actually
you're up
occur,
every
but.
Single day, you know, because I know how to through my trials and tribulations, through my journey of this podcasting world, I kind of learned, I think I have an idea of like how podcast charts are seeded, and talk radio, daily radio formats work, lend themselves incredibly well to dominating chart topping algorithms, but nobody seems to want to do it. They're like, what, you can put it digitally on the air? Like, yes, you can. And, but I don't know. And so it's not a problem. It's just kind of disheartening, because it's like, I know, I see you, I want to help you, I like you, but you won't let me help you. But yeah, it is what it is. You know who doesn't need help? Rich?
I don't know, because there's a few guys on our call sheets. I don't know. I think I know who you're talking about, because one of these people that we're going to talk about does need help and the other doesn't. So I think you're going to say Ichiro Suzuki.
Well, I was going to say Bernie Mac, because he's the original Mr. 3000.
He is really the original.
No, actually, now that I think about it, he does need help because he's dead. But
right, yeah, he's having a little struggle right now.
Yeah, little problem. Yeah. He's on the DL, going to come back. He's on the pup list, physically. God, I just put Bernie Mac, who's dead, on the pup list. But yeah, Ichiro Suzuki, Mr. 3000, hit his 3000th hit over the weekend. That's, you know, I'm trying to think of the last few times I've watched history happen in sports. Watched it happen. And Rich, I remember we watched, you and I were at Buffalo Wild Wings. We saw Barry Bonds break the all-time home run record. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, regardless of what we're going to say, all aboard the Hot Take Express coming up. Doot, doot. But it was, Rich, can you describe your feelings watching it? Because when I was watching it, I thought, when I watched the highlight, that is, I thought, wow. Here it is, crystal clear, history being made, 1080p, and I get a front row seat. I can rewind it, I can pause it, and I can watch everybody celebrate coming on the field. The baseball game stopped for a few moments while everybody celebrated Ichiro Suzuki hitting number 3,000. I'm sure there's going to be a few more, but it was really, really, it was interesting, because it doesn't really happen all that often that you get to watch live and in color, or on a little bit of a tape delay, history. Did you feel right. The same way?
I did, yeah, and I always kind of do, and I'm a little conflicted because when people discuss like Hall of Fame stuff, and we'll get to that here in a little bit, we're going to talk about Ichiro Suzuki and his Hall of Fame chances or what we think of them, but people, when we discuss Hall of Fames, and people do that, they always bring up, you know, 3,000 hits, 400 homers, 500, like these nice round numbers, and I always argue, oh, no, it doesn't matter, like, don't have a benchmark be the difference, like, don't have a guy that's at, you know, 599 home runs not be enough because he didn't get to one more and didn't get that 600, mm-hmm. just because it's a nice, easy to pack around number, but in this case, I'm okay with it, and that's, I don't know why, it's weird in that sense where I kind of like that idea that, okay, here's this benchmark that this guy, his entire career, this year, this is all this was about for Ichiro, is getting to this 3,000, getting to this elite round number that everybody cares about, that everybody kind of separates of, okay, these are the truly elite hitters of the elite hitters, and everybody below them is whatever. I was just so happy to see him get to that round number, because there was a point, and I believe you and I maybe had talked about this at the beginning of the year, that people were wondering, I don't think he's going to be able to do this. Like, he's, right. I forgot what he came into the year with, but it wasn't looking good. He had been having a lot of bad years in a row. I mean, last year was like really bad for Ichiro. Mm-hmm. It looked like that was the end of the road for him. His Yankees years were hit or miss. They were kind of and he's 42 years old. So the idea that like this guy was going to stay healthy all year, get the amount of hits necessary to get that 3,000, it was a question. And it was kind of, and that was what I was really awesome to see, is that, hey, it wasn't a question. Now this guy went out there, and what I think was the best part is it wasn't a slap bunt hit. It wasn't like it went through some guy's legs and the scorer said, it wasn't like a blooper where the guy just missed it. Like that, he almost hit a home run on his 3,000th hit, which was the best,
right?
The best, most thing, like most Ichiro thing ever, is to just go, you know what, for 3,000, I'm just gonna hit this thing out of here. Like he hit it off the wall at Coors Field, which is still a huge accomplishment. But yeah, it was just awesome to see him just banging off that wall and then hustle all the way.
Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. Should he have gone for the inside the park home run?
I think he had, you know, I think he would have had it.
Right?
Do you think so?
Did you watch that highlight? For a 42-year-old guy. For a 42-year-old guy, he's still kind of quick.
Because if you see the right fielder, I forgot who it was that was fielding that, the ball kind of went off the wall and they kind of let the ball go. And the center fielder's coming there and he's getting it. But by the time I see the center fielder grab a hold of the ball, Ichiro is like really close to third. And I'm thinking, man, that would have been sweet. Like, even if it's a bang bang play, like, how cool is that then? If it's like he slides in,
right?
And it's like, no, he's safe. We're good. And that, you know, then everybody just goes nuts. It's an inside the park home run versus 3,000. That would have been pretty sweet.
That would have been probably best baseball moment ever seen. Man, no, Barry Bonds breaking the record, but
yeah, you got like walk-off World Series home runs, but that's up there. It's for sure up there.
Yeah, but the downside is that it's either the best thing or the worst thing.
Because if he's out,
he still gets the hit. He still gets his last safe base. He still gets
a
triple.
Right. I forget. Yeah, right.
But he's out at home, right? That would have been the worst thing. So,
yeah,
you know, everybody's
crowd.
But I still got the hit. Woo! Yeah, okay. So everybody's calling for the third base coach. Like, why didn't he send him? He could have done it. Well, because then it could have been probably the worst thing ever.
Yeah, that makes a lot. I didn't think of that scenario. I'm thinking that he'd just be out and be like, oh, we'll do it again the next time or whatever. No, but then that's like, yeah, you got a hit, and he's like hurt, and he's like sore because right. Like you got a hard tag on him.
Because he is 42, and he's played a lot of baseball. Like that's a hard 42. I mean, how many times did he lead the league in games played and plate appearances?
Oh God, it's got to be I think 4 or 5 times at least. I mean, a ton during his first few years in the MLB. And like again, we got to remember this guy was 27 when he came in the league, and mm-hmm. like people are talking about that. And that's gonna be a big talking point throughout this week and when he eventually retires. That this guy came to the league basically, you know, you could say there was a time where that was the beginning of your prime. Now it's kind of the beginning of the end of your prime
mm-hmm.
with today's sort of aging curve. So whatever you want to do, but basically like in or about out of his prime, he came into the league. And this is, you know, everything that we've seen since then is like, you know, icing on the cake to mm-hmm. an extent. Like basically from 30 on is like, wow. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I'll give you 27, 28, 29, 30. But then everything out after that is just like unbelievable.
And after 35, too, it's still in his age 36 season, I believe, is when you started to see the kind of the downturn. I believe that was 2011 was when he was 35. No, that wouldn't make sense. That would be his age 36, 37 season. So 2010, he didn't didn't have a really an Ichiro year, but 2011 was kind of when you saw the downturn. And then, but still, in that 2011 season, he had 161 games. In 2012, 162. 2013, 150. 2014, 143. 2015, 153. And now 95 in parts with the Marlins. And I'm hard-pressed to think of any near 40-year-old player that was regular every day, irrespective of performance. You got A-Rod, who's not, for other reasons, because he's bad. But was there anybody else? Was Jeter was still run out there every day, though, right? Wasn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think one of the other important parts, too, is that he did some DH, but for the most part, this guy has been in the outfield like the entire time. It's not like he's gotten the thing. Like, Ortiz has had the ability to, you know, and he's having a fantastic year. Like, Ortiz is having a next-level season at his age or whatever. But, you know, and I'm not one of those anti-DH guys, of course, if you listen to the show, but the fact that he can, you know, just kind of go out there and hit, swing a bat, and that's it, and he's good and ready to go, like, yeah, you can maybe then hold on to your skills a little bit longer. Ichiro isn't that. You cannot put Ichiro as a DH. Like, that's just not something you would do because it's just not...
Horrible production from a DH. That would be horrible
production.
Yeah,
like, you don't want that. You don't want, like, that. You want a big fatty swinging a big stick and hitting dingers. Like, that's what you want out of your DH or whatever. So to have Ichiro there, you don't, and he's still... like kind of an okay defender. Like, he's not a very good defender anymore, not at his level that he was, where he was just throwing guys out from, you know, the corner of right field all the way to third or whatever on like one hop. Like, that's still one of my favorite plays ever, is like his first season, one of the first few years. Like, there's something that, like, it goes to the wall and he just grabs it and on like one hop nails the guy.
How does he throw that,
like,
hard for a guy that's
ridiculous.
So little? It's,
and like, nobody understands. Everybody just like looks up, like even the guy who got out, and everybody's just like, wait, what? Like, how did
and
he's
just
what?
Like, yeah, that's what I
did. I did that.
I've been doing it for seven years in Japan too, by the way.
Right, so. Exactly. And doing this as pretty much primary and outfielder, which is just an incredible achievement in of itself, that he's still been that productive, you know, playing the field most of those times. He's got 45 career starts at DH.
Wow.
He's got 2,187 in the outfield.
Yeah, that is a corner outfielder. There's not going to be like, well, wait, does he go in as a DH or does he go in as a... No, he goes in as an outfielder. Now, okay, let's talk about Hall, because that's what everybody wants to talk about. Ichiro, Hall of Fame candidacy. Now, I'm arguing here, from here on out, unless I specifically say so, I know that Ichiro is going to be a Hall of Famer. I know, probably first ballot.
Oh, there's no doubt, yeah.
But the question is, I'm arguing, should he be? I know he is. I know that's what is going to happen. I'm not going to be betting against that. But my argument is whether he should be, and that is what is fueling my arguments, not like, well, I don't really think he's going to... Oh, of course, there's always going to be that one crotchety old sports writer that's like, I'm not going to... I still remember Pearl Harbor or something.
Right, yes.
Or the former WWE guy who's working for ESPN now, who said...
Yeah, well, he doesn't learn English, even though he knows English.
He speaks English very well. He just...
Well, you don't... Todd Grisham, don't send that tweet out. That's a bad tweet. Do a little bit of
double
research
down on it too. Double down
yeah.
on it when we're like, people started responding like, no, he speaks English, Todd. You're like, come on, buddy. He's like, should have learned it. Why did he speak through an interpreter if he speaks it so well? It's like, because.
Right. And I heard a quote. And again, like, you know, it's easy for you to say Todd Grisham, like, like entitled white dude. Like, but Ichiro said that when he speaks through an interpreter because he's not 100% confident. He's a perfectionist. Ichiro, as shockingly, if you watch his game and watch how he plays baseball, he's a perfectionist and doesn't like the idea that when he speaks in English, like, he might misconstrue words, or maybe he doesn't say a word properly, and people would... So he uses the interpreter. He speaks in Japanese, and the interpreter then says what he wants, exactly how he wants to say it, versus him sort of, you know, he knows English, but he's not 100% confident in his English.
But
that's not good. Not good enough for Todd Grisham.
No, you've got to learn. But his interpreter is somebody he's known for decades, right?
I think that's a guy who came with him,
right? So
when he came to Seattle initially, yeah.
So he knows who he is, and he's confident that they understand each other and what he's trying to communicate in Japanese, and then also that his interpreter has a better mastery of the English language. And there's nothing wrong with that. And you know, I'm not one of those people, you've been here for so long, you can't learn English. Brr, how dare you? It is what it is. But Hall of Fame candidacy, Ichiro Suzuki. Rich, first blush, where do you sit? Yay or nay? Should he be? That's the sigh of somebody who's not very confident.
It's not, yeah. In doing this research, so I went into, when we were initially getting this idea for the show today, of course, we got to talk about Ichiro today. So I'm looking it up and I go, yeah, this guy absolutely is. You know, you look at a lot of his... just the numbers of like the roster. We'll go through this here in a little bit. 122nd in career WAR. I'm using Baseball Reference WAR. I think we're going to use that for the rest of this segment as well. Mm-hmm. So if you're curious, I don't want to say B WAR the entire time. I'm just going to say WAR, but it's Baseball Reference WAR. So he's 122nd for position players. Currently tied with Roberto Clemente in all-time hits at. You can probably guess it, 3,000. So nice and easy there. He's one of five players who accumulate 3,000 hits in fewer than 20 seasons. He only needed 16. The others are Roberto Clemente, who, of course, you know, has 3,000 hits at 18 seasons. Wade Boggs, 18 seasons to get 3,010. Lou Brock, 19 seasons to get 3,023. And then Rod Carew, who needed 19 seasons to get 3,053. His 224 hits over the first 10 years of his career, that's tops all time. It's not even close either. Paul Wehner, who finished with 3,152, he's second, and he's got 2,036 homers through his or hits through his first 10 years. Ichiro, 2,244. He's closely followed by Kirby Puckett, Al Simmons, and Wade Boggs. Pete Rose is sixth in that over the first 10 years with 1,922. One of the interesting facts that I really liked about him is that Ichiro's he's got in 2002 he had 27 intentional walks, which is pretty like imagine like intentionally walking each like that like
why are you
not
walking
a home,
Ichiro
like you intentionally walk Barry Bonds because he's gonna hit a dinger and that's it, but no, he was so dangerous in 2002 that he got walked intentionally 27 times, and that's the most of any player all time with less than 10 home runs in a season. The others that are close are Wade Boggs, Spike Owen, Tony Gwynn, Bill Russell, those sort of guys, the kind of slap hitty guys. Mm-hmm. Extrapolating to his entire career, Ichiro, Tony Gwynn, and Wade Boggs are the only players ever to have 150 intentional walks throughout their career and less than 150 home runs. So this is a guy, again, that people intentionally walked him. Like they like he's on that level
of Tony Gwynn,
where they're like I don't want him to hit a single. Like he is so dangerous that we don't want him to hit at all. Like even though he's not going to hit a home run, we just don't want to deal with him. We want to put him on base and not deal with him. And he's fast too. That's the other thing. He can steal a base on you too. So it's not like a guy that you really want to put on there. Again, but it's just a ton of good stuff. He's fifth all time in hits after the age of 35. His 1,195 trails only Pete Rose, Cap Anson, Sam Rice, and Honus Wagner. So for all intents and purposes, we can basically say Pete Rose because the other guys played much before, like right. Integration and like you know expansion. Like
that was an odd time in baseball history,
right? Like Honus Wagner, especially. It's like yeah, he's got like great stats, but like I one podcast I listen to, Baseball Prospectus, is Effectively Wild podcast. Mm-hmm. I think they put like 1975 as like the year that like baseball began. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
No, there's just so much weird stuff that happens before and weird like so yeah, it's just kind of interesting that those are the guys. You know, you had dug this up that if he had spent his entire career in the major leagues, he and was able to average at least 75% of his current, you know, 162 game average, which is about, you know, 150 hits per season until his age 27 season. So if we basically say, you know, he debuted in Japan in age 20, if he was in the majors and basically did 75% of what he did here, what would he be? And you put him at about 1,050 more hits.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking greatest hitter of all time, you know, almost
right.
No doubt,
without
question.
He's
like,
chasing Ty Cobb. He might. I don't know if he catches Pete Rose at 75%. I don't think he does because I don't know. I don't know. Can he? Does he still want to play? I don't know if he wants to play.
I think this is it. Yeah.
But he's chasing Ty Cobb. Might catch Ty Cobb, but he is top three in hits of all time.
Right.
And we are honestly talking about him as one of the modern day best left-handed bats. Hitting bats of the modern day, and the really interesting part is that his batting average from Japan to the major leagues only dipped by about 12%.
Yeah, that's I've always loved that stat about him because people will immediately go up and go, oh, you
well,
know,
so
oh,
it was
yeah,
in
yeah.
Japan because when yeah. you bring it up, well, he had 1,400 hits in Japan before he came to the major leagues. They go, whoa, that was Japan. That's Japan. That's that doesn't count.
It's a high school. It's based on high school.
Right,
it's
a high school league like, could go dominate Japanese teams. Like no, they can't. They
cannot.
They play baseball over there, and he only like a 12% dip throughout his career. That's career numbers. That's not like oh well, okay, you know, the league's got to adjust, and I get that. But he maintained that throughout his career, which was really interesting. And also, he averaged 177 hits per season in Japan with 32 fewer games a season. So the 150 Crazy. Hits per season that will get him to top three of all time in hits is incredibly conservative. More likely he does average somewhere around 175 to 185 hits per game before he enters his, quote, prime at age 27 in 2001, and he passes Pete Rose. This season is where he would be. I mean, no matter how you want to treat those 1,400 hits, well, you know, how really whatever kind of reasonable stat you want to apply to them, some reduction for the quality of the league, because I don't think it's fair to completely discount them. Maybe not for Hall of Fame consideration, but just when generally talking about Ichiro, the baseball player, how do you not talk about his historic career in Japan before he came to the major leagues? And you have to couple those two things together. And even if you take it at 75%, he is one of the best hitters of all time. It's absolutely incredible what Ichiro is able to do, both in Japan and here, crossing that void and amassing in a really short amount of time, which is really cool, because in part 16 seasons, 15 whole seasons and parts of this season, the 16th, he amassed 3,000 hits. Clemente needed 18, Boggs 18, Brock 19, and Rod Carew 19. So realistically, Ichiro would have two more seasons to get to 3,000, but he didn't need them. He did it so quickly, I can't think of anybody else that was this good this quickly to reach these kind of heights.
And now you're going to destroy it all.
And now I'm going to destroy it all. Because look, Rich, I texted you, don't hate me, because I know Ichiro is your guy. Because when we play MLB The Show, you make me draft Ichiro.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You got to draft Ichiro in the fantasy draft just to have him, because he's actually
a great bench player.
He's a great bench player. Yes, he is. Because when somebody's hurt or they need an off day, an outfielder needs an off day, it doesn't matter which outfielder, because you just say, hey, Ichiro, go out there and play center field. He's like, all right.
And he lays down a little bunt and then gets on first and you're good to go. Like, perfect.
Now, I'm going to break it all down for you, because Hot Take Express is arriving at the station. It's pulling up. And here's my hot take. Hot take.
Does it have a dinner cart or no?
No, but a bar car. It's got a bar car with some light hors d'oeuvres, but no like restaurant service.
Wait, are we talking like olives with like blue cheese in them, or just like
some pretzels, maybe some?
Oh, those aren't hors d'oeuvres. What are you?
Or bar food, bar snacks. You know, maybe they can heat up some nachos for you. Maybe they can heat up some nachos for you. But
popcorn and
maybe a frozen pizza they can throw in like the oven or whatever. But they're not making you like a steak.
I don't know if I'm jumping on board yet. But,
plenty of good beer, though, on the Hot Take Express.
How long? Well, I guess it depends how long the ride is. So.
I don't know, because I don't know how many people are going to get on this.
It might be a short one.
Ichiro Suzuki is a fringe Hall of Famer at best. And I'm going to say that. And I'm going to stand by it, because here's why. Let me make my case. Since 2011, Ichiro has posted a slash line, batting average, OBP, slugging, of 271, 311, 345. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, well, that's since 2011. He hasn't played a lot. Au contraire, my friend. With an 84 OPS plus across 864 games, or about 29% of his MLB career plate appearances. So, since 2011 until now, represents about a third of Ichiro's hitting career. And he has posted 271, 311, 345 with an 84 OPS plus. In that time, across six seasons, he has managed 5.3 wins above replacement. That is less than one win above replacement every single year. Since 2011, for a third of his career, he has been barely above replacement level. And interestingly enough, he has a this is kind of a weird way to say it, but if you look at careers only beginning in the year 2000 until now. Okay, so if you take every player from, let's say, if they were playing in the year 2000, call that the start of their career until now, with the minimum of 2,000 plate appearances, Ichiro is 209th in weighted runs created plus. That is the weighted version, league and park adjusted, of that is the Fangraph sabermetric take on Bill James's runs created. They weighted the runs, accounted for league and park effects, and made him an average. And he has been only about 5% better than league average in weighted runs created since the year 2000. On top of being similar to Lou Brock. incredibly similar to Lou Brock, both in terms of the positions they played and how they derived their value, being slappy single hitters who will steal a base on you. Brock, of course, more than Ichiro, right, with little power to speak of and good to above, well above average defense. He's very similar to Lou Brock, and Lou Brock is a fringe Hall of Famer.
Right. I think, you know, I did a little bit of digging as well, and you know, you look at the initial Hall of Fame. So this is just Hall of Famers, and I found 73 Hall of Famers that had wins above replacement totals less than Ichiro's, 59.9. So okay, from that idea, then okay, he's not, you know, in that, if we take that at its face value, mm-hmm. okay, 73 guys are lower than him in that. Fringe might not be there, but you know, there's a lot of guys above him as well in that. So that you take a little bit, but I thought an interesting part was that only 24 Hall of Famers have a lower OPS plus than Ichiro's 108 in OPS plus. Again, similar is league and park adjusted and all that sort of stuff. You can look it up. Baseball Reference has a really good glossary if you want to get a little bit more into it, if you're not aware with that. But the most modern players are players that are similar to that OPS plus, that are in the Hall of Fame, that are modern. Because again, you know, I don't want to bring up guys from, you know, the 20s when you know that just doesn't do any good. But you have Ozzie Smith and Brooks Robinson are the two guys that you sort of look at there. Ozzie Smith, the guy who derived a lot of his value from defense, mm-hmm. but was an okay hitter. And then Brooks Robinson, again, who's thought of as like a top tier elite all time great defensive player, decent hitter, but everybody thinks of his defense first and foremost. Well, right. Those guys, people don't do that for Ichiro. The first thing you think of with Ichiro is not defense. You think hitting, yet his hitting numbers don't really jump out all that much at you.
And it's not right. And it's not the they don't jump out at you, despite the hit totals and the counting stats, specifically hits. Of course, he's you know, we know where he is there. I just, you know, in terms of rate statistics, when you start taking a deeper look at what Ichiro did, irrespective of the counting stats, I don't see Hall of Fame numbers. I don't see Hall of Fame value to his various teams that he played for. He was certainly very good for a long, long time. We're not doubting that, or I'm not doubting that, rather. It's just that I, for my Hall of Famers, I want more. I want something rate-based, something that will jump out and grab me and say, look at this, this is amazing. I want to see you dominate your league, whether it be in weighted runs created, weighted on base average, or OPS plus, something like that, and it's just not there for Ichiro.
Yeah, and I think one of the parts that's kind of cool is if you look at the Baseball Reference has this on their page as well, you know, the Hall of Fame statistics, where they look at a few different things, and they have Jaws, which is Jay Jaffe, who currently writes for Sports Illustrated, but is a former, you know, baseball prospectus guy, and one of my favorite baseball writers in the world right now. I love everything that he puts out because it's all really good. It's all real. He's not biased. He's way into research, way into doing that stuff. So I love a lot of that. He you know, created a metric for Hall of Fame measurement that's called Jaws. And what he looks at is he looks at your position and how you rate using wins above replacement and Jaws, the stat he created, versus other Hall of Famers that are played your position, other Hall of Fame right fielders. So you look at Ichiro. He doesn't really jump off the page in that at all. He's, you know, the average Hall of Fame right fielder, this is 24 that are in there right now, have a 73.2 career wins above replacement. Mm. Ichiro has a 59.9. Mm. That's dramatically lower.
Right.
You look at his seven-year peak. This is where he's okay, because and you talked about this before. If you look at, you know, post-2011, yeah, you get a lot of crap there. That's a third of his career that's just not very good. But the first third of his career is incredible, and that's what the seven-year peak is. When he came to the league at 27, what he did during that peak, he's at a 43.6. The average right fielder in the Hall of Fame was at 43. So again, he's above that. He's better than them, but he's not like that. Isn't like, oh my God, look at his peak. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. It's, oh my God, it's unbelievable. Tear down the Hall of Fame. You got to put him in there right away. Some guys have that. Other guys do have that, where that peak, that seven-year peak, is so much better than the average Hall of Famer that it's a no doubt that, yeah, okay, maybe he tailed off a little bit at the back end of his career. Okay, the beginning of his career, he took a little while, but man, those 7 years, he was awesome. Ichiro, you know, he's better, but not jumping off the page. And then his Jaws, which again, you can go to Baseball Reference for kind of an idea of what that is. The average Hall of Fame right fielder, 58.1. He's 51.7. So that doesn't do him much good, but you look at the other stuff they have, and Baseball Reference has their other Hall of Fame stuff. you know, they have Black Ink, which is how many times you led the league in different things, and Hall of Fame Monitor, which sort of judges how many, you know, against your era, how many times did you lead leagues or whatever. And that's where Ichiro does jump off at the page, because in basic stats, that stuff that we've sort of used to use in terms of runs, batting average, hits, plate appearances, like those basic stuff, he is awesome at that. Mm-hmm. He is an all-time great, and that's why he is going to waltz in the Hall of Fame whenever he wants. The Hall of Fame Monitor, which is another stat that I believe Bill James had a lot to do with, he's 234. The likely Hall of Famer is 100. And that's, again, right, that's not based off of wins above replacement and that sort of stuff. That's based off he led the league in hits. He led the league in on base, or batting average, rather. He led the league in games played. He led the league in plate appearances. Like, those sort of basic stuff, he jumps off at the page at. But when you look and dig a little bit deeper into the advanced stuff, that's where he doesn't quite do it for a lot of people. So it'll be a very interesting thing when he does... you know, when his time is
right.
up.
Right. And I know he's going to get in, and I really have no qualms about it when he does, because this is just the Hall of Fame is something. If you get 3,000 hits, you, unless you're Pete Rose, you're going to be in the Hall of Fame. That's just where maybe it's not so arbitrary, but that's where the seemingly arbitrary watermark has been set, where if you get above this, you are in, and there's nothing anybody is going to say about it. And I understand that. However, I think even in a lot of these more reductive Black Ink, Gray Ink, Hall of Fame Monitor, I think Ichiro gets a lot more credit than perhaps he should for simply being durable. But maybe he should. Maybe he should,
yeah,
because durability is something
right.
we don't see a lot in the game today, which is very, very much true. I just have, in my Hall of Fame, in my baseball world, you get points for... sustaining an incredible amount of success over the vast majority of your career. And for Ichiro, he's been replacement level for about a third of it. And I think that's, for me, that's when I say, well, you've been very good for a long while. We'll put you in the Hall of Very Good, but your career does not necessarily mean to your career is not something that to me we need to hold up and say this has been one of the greatest ever. And I don't see it. Maybe I just have my parameters are out of whack, but I think forevermore, when Ichiro eventually is enshrined in the Hall of Fame, he will be one of the first out in my perennial or my annual. Let's clear out the crap from the Hall of Fame. Let's get rid of the Lou Brocks. Let's get rid of the, what are some other really bad guys in the Hall
of
Fame?
I do contend that I think you would find much worse guys before.
Yes,
you got
much worse
really
guy.
Do,
but
yeah.
I think he'll be in the first wave, maybe the second wave. Maybe he'll his 3,000 hits and his above average OBP and 300 batting average for his career, for a very long career, will keep him in there. I don't know. He's not in my world. Not in my, if I'm the sheriff of the Hall of Fame, he's not getting in. We're throwing him out on his ass. But that's just me. That's me. Rich, in your world, where is he? Where does he sit?
He's there. He's not an elite level. He's not like, and again, like you said, he's going to be, if not a first ballot, a second ballot, or he's going to be very quickly in there. He's a guy that I think deserves a little bit more kind of research and looking. I mean, there's a lot of guys in this Hall of Fame, or that are not in the Hall of Fame, rather, that I think are leaps and bounds better than Ichiro. Like a Tim Raines, I think, is absolutely better than an Ichiro or whatever. We're going to talk about a guy in a little bit, another, you know,
who is not going to get in.
Another PED guys that are not going to get in for, you know, various reasons or whatnot that are leaps and bounds better. So he's going to go in not being the best guy that's not in. I don't know if I'd put him on, like, I wouldn't say fringe, but he's not like a knockdown drag. He's not an absolute no doubter. If that makes sense.
Okay.
See, I think he's in. I think he's absolutely in, because it's just, I think there's something to be said for that durability and being able to play every single day and do what you do and be as consistent as he was for a majority of his career, at least two thirds of his career, until he saw it a little bit. But in terms of just consistent of getting on the field, I think that's important. I do judge that at least to an extent. But yeah, he's not a no doubter, but I think he's in for me, and I think I feel pretty comfortable with that.
All right. I, you know what?
There's a few guys I want in before I would put him in, though. He's not a day one guy, though.
Who's did a day one guy just announce his retirement for you?
Maybe.
Do you think A-Rod? Well, if you're a voter.
He's, He's an interesting one. I guess we'll get to that when we get to his segment. I don't know if that's
We'll get to it on the other side of the break. But just food for thought, maybe something to think about as you hear some stuff from our Voices of Wrestling podcasting network partners. Just something to think about. If you want to drop the steroid stuff, and just if you just want to talk about what he did on the field. Did Alex Rodriguez, who announced his retirement this week, his upcoming retirement, oddly forced by the Yankees, which we got to talk about too, that weird thing going on there.
No, he came to them and surprised them by telling him, I would like to quit. Yeah.
But then he said, no, Brian Cashman definitely told me to do this. So I'm like, oh, all right. On the other side of the break, more Hall of Fame baseball talk, as well as maybe some Dennis Rodman broken penis stuff. Who knows? We got a lot to talk about here on the K&P Show. We will be right back.
K&P fans, be sure to head over to voicesofwrestling.com this week for an all-new episode of Shake Them Ropes. Each week, Rob McCarron and Jeff Hawkins bring you Shake Them Ropes, talking all things WWE and NXT. If you're into nostalgia, every week Rob and Jeff discuss a new match on the WWE.com list of the top 100 matches to see on WWE Network. We run through the greatest matches in the history of pro wrestling, and you can share your thoughts on Twitter at Shake Them Ropes. In addition to our weekly episodes, after every WWE pay-per-view, we also go live on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to the Voices of Wrestling YouTube at voicesofwrestling.com/YouTube, and you can follow along to a live video stream as Shake Them Ropes goes live after every WWE pay-per-view. So fans, do not miss all new episodes of Shake Them Ropes. Voicesofwrestling.com. That's voicesofwrestling.com. For the best in pro wrestling coverage and commentary, look no further than Voices of Wrestling. Hi everybody, Rob McCarron here, and at Voices of Wrestling, we specialize in coverage of wrestling in the US and abroad. New Japan Pro Wrestling, Pro Wrestling Noah, Dragon Gate, Revolution Pro Wrestling, Evolve, Ring of Honor, and yes, WWE and NXT. We have it all. Reviews of every major show. Podcasts that cover it all, including the flagship Voices of Wrestling podcast hosted by Rich Craich and Joe Lanza. You won't get opinion this diverse from anyone else. Subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Watch our live shows on YouTube. And check out our daily reviews. All of this and more at voicesofwrestling.com.
This segment of the K&P Show is brought to you by, that's right, Mack Weldon. Right now, go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using our exclusive promo code KP. Got to do it. MackWeldon.com, and you get 20% off using our promo code KP. What do you get 20% off of? The best underwear, socks, shirts, polo shirts, and sweatshirts that you've ever worn. Mack Weldon, it's better than whatever you're wearing right now. So go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using our promo code KP. Welcome back to the K&P Show, everybody. Of course, you're with us because it's a podcast, and that's how it works.
Like, and you know what you're listening to,
right?
And
you know, like, exactly.
I always love that when people intro, like, "Hi, I'm John. This is the K&P." Like, but you got to do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
it's
and
just
you
ingrained be like, in my head that you got to.
Here's what we're gonna talk about, even though you're reading a description of what we're talking about now. Like,
there's a text description right there that tells you exactly what we're talking about. It's in the damn title. It's SEO out the wazoo up in here. But we left off talking about or hinting at teasing in the radio business. Alex Rodriguez announcing his retirement from Major League Baseball, or really it's the Yankees saying, please, please go away because you're not doing too well, old A-Rod. And we were talking a lot about Ichiro and his Hall of Fame merits. And Rich, we can incorporate steroids, the steroid thing, the aura, whenever you want. But I just want to know, in the things that you can see about A-Rod's career, not necessarily the things you can infer, like when was he on it, when was he off of it.
Well, he actually legitimately tested positive twice, which doesn't help.
Right, like, but so did Big Poppy, and everybody's loving Big Poppy all of a sudden.
I agree with that. I'm with you on the Big Poppy thing. I've always said
Big Poppy, Hall of Fame. It's like he tested positive and then tried to lie to you about it.
But he was on a list, and that list wasn't supposed to come out. His thing was always, that's always the funny thing that I tell people, is that they're like, oh, he was on the list, and that list wasn't supposed to come out. But I was like, but it did. Like, yeah, it doesn't matter.
That was when they were just like, let's get an idea of who's on it before we implement a widespread steroid policy. And then there were a lot of guys on it, and he was one of them. And it was out, and he tested positive. He didn't get punished for it, but he did. And I just... irrespective of all that, okay, let's drop all that.
Okay.
Player X, okay? What was Barry Bonds' awful name in MVP?
John Dode? Wasn't he John Dode?
John Dode. John Dode has A-Rod's career. Is he a Hall of Famer?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay. Absolutely. No question. First ballot.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, I can run it down if you want.
Absolutely. Please. I love relishing in the greatness of A-Rod because from where I sit, I don't care. I don't care what you took. I don't care when you took it. I don't care why you took it. I don't care when you stopped, if you tested positive. I don't care if you tried to fake out tests. I don't care. I don't care if you lied about it. I want to see you perform at your best ability. And if you shorten your lifespan, if you took chemicals that we don't know what it's going to do to you, I think that's a good enough gamble to say, all right, well, I'll let that go a little bit so you can make millions of dollars. Because what we've seen with Alex Rodriguez, outside of all the steroid crap, even including it, we have seen one of the probably top 20 baseball players of all time. We got to watch his career.
And you can also make the argument that you're not really entirely positive what steroids do for right. you as a baseball player. Like, there's obvious stuff that you could probably infer, but it's not 100% proven that it makes you great at baseball. Like, it maybe makes you more durable, maybe makes you a little bit stronger, but it's not,
It doesn't improve hand-eye, and home runs are jumping again, and we can't explain why. We don't know why. Well, I mean, we think we know why, but MLB's not saying. But there are a bunch of reasons why home runs can spike and go down and go up and down from year to year, from five-year period to five-year period.
I'll get my little steroid thing out, and then we'll strike it from the record and then just kind of talk about it right here. The thing that I would get with him, and this is what I get in this argument every year when Hall of Fame season comes around. If you don't want to vote A-Rod and you want to say because he tested positive under Major League Baseball rules and got suspended or whatever, and that is your reason for not putting him in the Hall of Fame because there's, the character clause and that sort of stuff, cool. I absolutely do get that. I understand why you would take that stance with it. The problem that I always have is people that take the stance on the Roger Clemenses and the Barry Bondses of the world and those sort of guys that, okay, show me the positive Barry Bonds test. Yes, I understand. His head did grow seven feet or whatever the hell. Like, I mean, his head
shoes
was gigantic.
Got bigger.
Yes.
His shoes
right.
got bigger.
Everything got bigger when he was like 35, which that doesn't happen. People don't do that. So, yes, I understand that, yes, he 100% most likely did steroids, but he never, ever, ever tested positive under any MLB rules. There was never a rule. Like, yes, nothing ever said that you cannot do this. You can't take these. Same with the Roger Clemens. Same mm-hmm. with, thank God Mike Piazza got in, even though people were like, oh, I saw him with back acne once, and that's why I'm not going to let him in. It's like, all right.
Yeah.
Like, Jeff Bagwell, like, oh, I don't know. Like, he looked like he took steroids. Like, that stuff I can't deal with. Like, that, if you want to make that argument, you're an idiot and just mm-hmm. burn your ballot, whatever. You're just forget it. You're done. If you want to make the argument with A-Rod, though, and a guy like Emmanuel Ramirez when he comes up, that these guys actually did test positive, and that is why you're not going to vote them, I won't argue with you on that. Because, okay, that, to me, I don't know if you're absolutely right. I don't think you're absolutely, mm-hmm. I don't think you're right. But if that's going to be your justification, I will let you have that justification. I'm not going to let you have it for a Barry Bonds or whatever.
Right.
Because he never, ever, ever tested positive.
You see, here's the thing, though. We know. We know as well as we can know that Barry Bonds took performance-enhancing drugs. Right? We have such a high degree of confidence that he did that we don't need a positive test to know that. Right? I mean, it's in that weird amorphous thing where we know and we don't know simultaneously. But like this, we know OJ did it, right? Right? OJ killed those.
I don't want the hot take of 1995.
Right. We know OJ killed these people. Just like we know Marvin Harrison shot at that guy.
Hey, he's a pro football Hall of Famer.
Right. I know. So. But we know Marvin Harrison pulled out two 5.7 9mm pistols, I want to say, and shot at a drug dealer outside of his car wash. We know he did it. We don't need a criminal conviction to say that he did it. Right. But if you're going to draw the line, and I can appreciate somebody drawing the line somewhere and saying, listen, we may get it wrong, but here's my benchmark, here's my line, and that is positive test. If you're going to say, well, he tested positive and this guy didn't, we know what Barry Bonds did. So what's your argument for keeping him out of the Hall of Fame if he never tested positive, but we know that he did it, just as we know that Alex Rodriguez did it. That's where I'm at. It just seems like a rather arbitrary thing when we can have mountains and mountains and mountains of evidence, and we can on our own come to a reasonable conclusion. The reasonable conclusion being that most of them took steroids. But you're drawing the line at a positive test. Again, I can appreciate it. It's just, I think it's rather arbitrary. And if you're going to draw the line there, that means you're going to let some steroid users in, but not others. And the only reason some are getting in over others is that their pee didn't turn up this or that. And I think that's, I don't know, it seems like an odd hill to die on when you break it down like that.
Absolutely. All right. So now.
All right. So no more steroids. No more steroids. We're talking about
Player X,
John Dowd, big left-handed hitting white guy.
Yeah, it was like 51, too, I think was his number. It was like some terrible right. number. But man, that guy could kill you. He could kill you.
Yeah. All the time when we did fantasy drafts, I was like, who the hell is John Dowd? And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Barry Bonds, because he doesn't want to.
He's killing you. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Here's A-Rod's. Player X. Sorry. Oh, John Dowd's resume.
All right, later.
Three MVP awards, top 10 in 10 seasons.
Top 10 in MVP All-Star. Voting?
Yep.
Okay.
Top 10 in MVP voting in 10 seasons. 14-time All-Star, 10-time Silver Slugger. He's 16th all-time in baseball reference WAR at 117. He's the active leader, of course. 20th in all-time hits, 8th in all-time runs scored, 4th in all-time home runs. He's at 696, man. How sweet would it be this week if he gets 700?
Okay, let's take a break from his resume. I'm so pissed at the Yankees. So pissed. Why now? You suck anyway. You're not going anywhere. The only thing you're hoping for is a better draft pick so that you can kind of reload on the fly. If you put A-Rod out there and he sucks, he's only helping you get better quicker. He's only helping you do that. So why not let him go out and suck for the remainder of this season so that he can try to get to 700 home runs? Why not? What's the downside? Besides, you don't like him because he's a Jag and you're Jags, but you're the Jags that sign his checks, so you ultimately win. I don't know. It would be awesome to see him get to 700 because even when Barry Bonds was doing his thing, Rich, you and I, when we did 643 Sports, we would look at A-Rod. We were like, okay, we know Barry. Well, I mean, how our naivete at the time, but we know Barry Bonds is such a, you know, he did it. He's taking steroids. We know it. But A-Rod is the guy that's going to break his record anyway. So who cares? And now we know that that's folly. But I would love to see A-Rod get to 700. That would be absolutely fantastic. And why not let him do it? Right. Right.
Not the Yankees.
No.
Right. Because they just don't really like the guy. And like, okay. The funniest thing ever is like, A-Rod came to us on Sunday and said he wanted to quit, which was like, A-Rod, we're going to release you. You just want to say it was you? And he's like, oh, okay.
All right, fine.
Like, you can go sign. And they've said it. The funny thing that I love about them is they're like, oh, he'll become a special advisor. And like, that's just so they can at least like on their payroll say like, oh, no, this employee makes like this. So they don't just have to pay checks for no reason. But that they said, like, oh, he's free to sign with anybody if he wants. Like,
you know, Kenny Williams, I give you free reign. Go ahead.
I think he's going to do it. I feel like Kenny's going to do it. And he should. I would go to every game if A-Rod, like, I mean, in pursuit of that 700,
oh, yeah.
I'm going.
Oh,
I'm
yeah. Going. Absolutely. I would. This is
if you're going to sign every, like, bottom of the shit, like, terrible, like,
Ken Griffey Jr., fat and
when
bad
he's like,
and
right, let's get, like, yeah. Weird Manny Ramirez who might not show up. And, like, I love that. When they acquired Manny Ramirez, it took him, like, a week and a half to show up. He was just like, yeah, I'll report pretty soon. They're like, all right, well,
all right, see you, dude.
Man.
All right, man. All right, we'll be over
he's
here.
Like, all right, I'm coming.
All right,
like, all right, I'll go.
And you know, Kenny Williams was happy as hell to finally get Ken Griffey Jr. He's like, yeah, finally. So you know what, Kenny,
he played him in center field. That's my favorite thing ever.
Oh my
about
God, he played a 35-year-old Ken Griffey Jr. in center field,
who hadn't played center field in like a decade. No. The entire Reds tenure, he was playing right. Yep. And they were like, hey, play center, buddy. He's like, ah.
But you know what, KW? You got free reign now. This season's over. Go sign A-Rod and just tell him, swing away, baby.
If you're any team on the market, like let's say you're a team that's not, like if you're the Padres or you're like, you know, go down the list. Like, why not, right?
Absolutely. Come in here and swing as hard as you can, dude. Every day will be A-Rod bobblehead day. Don't care. Get him in the ballpark. Get butts
and
in the seats.
He's not a guy that people like, though. But people don't like him, but I feel like they would, in pursuit of the 700 or whatever, they would.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. They'd forget all about it. They'd be like, "What? Okay, I don't care. He's a jagbag. So what? We're going to go watch him hit some dingers, damn it." And then you know what? Maybe he gets on a tear. Maybe he does go after. Oh, no, he won't. That's just wishful thinking. Damn it, A-Rod. Damn it. All right, so back
third
to his resume.
In RBIs, yeah. Third all-time in RBIs. 19th all-time in win probability added, which is a big fuck you to the whole he's a choke artist thing, which is completely wrong and always been wrong.
He only
and
hits home runs when they're winning. A-Rod sucks.
Those matter, too. Those count, too.
Oh, no. Like, and, he's,
and then thankfully, though, he had the one playoffs in 2009, I want to say.
Yes, where he finally would, like, just put his thing down.
He was just it. Like, he was the 100% the best guy in the Yankees, like, the entire series. Mm-hmm. And all series. Yeah, here, so I'm fired up to 2009. So, in the ALDS, 2009 against the Twins, he batted 455, 500 on base, and a 1,000 slugging.
Yes!
ALCS, 429, 567, 952.
Mm.
And then that choke artist in the World Series, he only hit 250, 423, 550. Oh. He only hit one home run. So,
yeah.
Well, by the way, he hit three dingers in the ALCS and two in the ALDS. That's in three games, six games, and six games. So,
boom.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not bad.
Mm-hmm.
He also led the league in salary 11 of 13 years from 2001 to 2013 and was second the other two seasons. So,
oof. I remember when the Yankees signed him to that deal, I was just. You're going to pay him what when he's how old? Okay, I guess.
And he's almost done it all. Like, and that's the funny thing about him is that, yeah, there's been some rocky road. You know, of course, he missed an entire season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, came back last year and had resurgent seasons. But at the time, everybody looked at that deal and went, oh, my God, when he's 39, you're going to be blah, blah, blah. Like, no way. Like, they're only paying 1 year out of it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. Like, that's honestly not that bad for signing, like, a 32-year-old to, like, a 10-year contract. That's not ideal. But
mm-hmm.
they were able to do that. And that man got his paper. I spent time as the youngest player in baseball in both 1994 and 95 and was also a top 10 oldest player in 2015 and 2016. He was sixth in 2015 and third this year, 2016.
Wow, as far he was as an oldest in the player. League when he was 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
And his batting line from 1996, which is his first year as a full-time starter, to 2011, which is basically his last All-Star season. So we'll count that as his sort of peak,
mm-hmm.
I think you'd say. 303, 388, 572, 146 OPS plus, and then 624 home runs.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. That's an all-time season. Or an all-time career.
This was an interesting thing. It was from the Bronx. There's a baseball prospectus. They have all their local ones, and this is the BP Bronx, I believe is the name of it, of course. It features kind of Yankees articles with, you know, a statistic slant. But this, I thought, was a great quote. It basically encapsulates A-Rod to a perfect extent, that A-Rod was never the face, yet he was never truly the heel either. There's a little reference, wrestling references there, too.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't Roger Clemens or Barry Bonds, but he never found the magic elixir for post-steroid adoration like Nelson Cruz, Bartolo Colon, or David Ortiz did either, because mm-hmm. those guys are all kind of heralded. Bartolo Colon is loved by everybody. David Ortiz is loved by everybody. Nelson Cruz is considered, yeah, this guy's great. Nobody really cares that he tested positive. But A-Rod, nobody hates him, but nobody really, like, he's always just right. been this kind of middle ground guy. Like, people dislike him, but not, like, to the same, there's not the same vitriol that they have for a Bonds or for a Clemens. There's never been that for him. It's just been, like, apathetic, like, ah, that guy looks like a jag. And, like, mm-hmm. he is, because he is a jag.
Yeah.
And it's like, but he's not, like, enough of a jag where, like, you hate him. You're just like, ah, that guy's kind of a dickhead. And then, like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know.
And if he was just more, I mean, Andy Pettit was a guy, he was on that list too, right? He was a guy, yeah. Andy Pettit tested positive and he played in the league afterwards. And Pettit was a guy who came out and he tried to do like a soft ownership of it. Like, oh, I didn't know what I was taking, but I did it. And so I'll accept that. And he's still beloved by Yankees fans, but it was weird because Alex Rodriguez, who spent, that's actually his longest tenure in the MLB is with the New York Yankees. And he was really good for the New York Yankees for a while. They seem to just be kind of, they're tired of him. They want him to finally go away. And I don't know, maybe it's a little bit out of town stupid on my part because that 2014, 2015, are you going to be suspended for how long? And then the Yankees didn't want to honor his milestones as he hit them in 2015. Maybe there was a lot more of that than I'm aware of, but I don't know, if this guy was from Chicago, if he was in, or if he played for the White Sox for as long as he did the Yankees and was that good, won three MV, or no, no, check that, two MVPs for the Chicago White Sox, I'd be sad to see him go. I wouldn't be wanting him to leave or wanting him to finally end his career. But people in New York, they seem to just be like, all right, your time's up.
Yeah,
get out of here.
And he played a lot in New York, too. I think that's the thing that people forget. And I think that's one of the problems that he never really, like, Seattle doesn't really think of him as one of their own. Mm-hmm. Texas doesn't think of him as one of their own. And New York certainly doesn't, because he played along the same time as Jeter, a lot of it. And Jeter's their guy, not A-Ray. Like, so it's a very interesting thing. He's in a very weird spot where, like, he should be. I mean, like, again, let's. I'm looking at the Hall of Fame statistics for him. I mean, they're incredible. Mm-hmm. Black Ink, he's 68. The average Hall of Famer is 27. Gray Ink, he's 214. The average Hall of Famer is 144. Hall of Fame Monitor, he's 390. The likely Hall of Famer is 100. Hall of Fame Standards, average Hall of Famer 50. He's 76. And then Jaws, they have him as a shortstop still because that's where he played most of his career and where he was better at, even though Derek Jeter didn't want to move over. But if you take him at shortstop, 117.9 career WAR. The average Hall of Fame shortstop is 66.7. 7-year peak, he's 64.2. The average Hall of Famer, 42.8. And his Jaws is 91. The average Hall of Famer, shortstop, 54.8.
Wow. Now, here's one thing that I saw. The Hall of Fame Monitor, which we looked at, or I was kind of like, you know, with Ichiro. Ichiro was what, 240? 234.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
He's 30th in Hall of Fame Monitor. A likely Hall of Famer is 100, and I believe 130 is basically you're a shoe-in, and anything above 130 is just, you know, that's just gravy. You're playing with house money. Alex Rodriguez is a 390 Hall of Fame Monitor. Fifth. He would be fifth of all players ever to play in the MLB in a Hall of Fame Monitor statistic. That's, wow. It's like watching. It's almost like watching Babe Ruth, right?
You're watching one
of the greatest of all time, for whatever, why ever he was great, doesn't matter. Performing at the highest level as one of the greatest of all time. Now, I brought this up with Ichiro, and I think it's only fair to do it with A-Rod. The tail end of his career, over the last four seasons, A-Rod has produced 4.3 wins above replacement. Let me just double check that right now. 4.6 wins above replacement across 1,564 plate appearances. That represents roughly 13% of his career playing time. So at the tail end of his career, yes, he was pretty bad. He was about a one WAR player across four seasons, and if you don't count the season that he was forced to miss. However, the time that he has been bad represents only 13% of his career. So I'm very confident in saying that he was great enough, not just very good enough or good enough. He was great enough for long enough to be a first ballot unanimous Hall of Famer, again, if not for the crotchety old sports writers that wouldn't vote for him anyway, even if there wasn't the aura of steroid usage and positive tests around him, there would be a guy that just isn't going to vote for him unanimously because that's just what they do. But you've watched greatness, and greatness is about to say goodbye. Hopefully another team signs him. I want the White Sox to. I take any
last place team. You know what I mean? Like any team that's just kind of mired in mediocrity. Like, why not? Like the Rays. Why didn't Tampa Bay just go, you know what? Yeah. Like, yeah. And then he just becomes like, and then he just goes into the Hall of Fame as like a Ray. He's like, no, I
he plays
like,
for five more years with the Rays.
Right. He's like, this is my team. Like, they've always loved me.
I want to wear a Rays
like
hat.
Yeah. Like the A's just pick him up for no reason, or like, you know, the Diamondbacks. Just like, I just want some team like that because that would be cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't want him to go out like this. This is not a good way to go out. Like, I want at some point, somewhere along the line, people to appreciate a little bit of what he did and not just, again, the
they seem
instant
so happy
conversation.
He's gone. He's there.
Like, the instant. Yeah. Like the first conversation is either he's a dickhead or he did steroids. And that's it. And it's like, man, like you just let this guy like go through. Like you just watched one of the best players ever, regardless of, again, like you said, regardless of how he did it or why, whatever. You just watched one of those guys and like nobody appreciated it in any way whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Ever at any point during that.
Nope. Even when
during his Seattle years, maybe. a little bit during his Texas. But even then, like right when he signed that big deal in Texas, people already started hating him because it was like, well, sorry, I signed a big contract because the guy gave me a big contract and I'm a good player. Like,
right. And
he, like, people were mad at him about that. It's like, well, what the fuck do you want me to do?
Right. Right. Like, he was. So let's see. He was 18 when he made his debut in 1994. So by the time he signed, when did he sign that Rangers deal? Was that?
I think 2001 when he did. I don't have it in front of
okay,
me.
Okay. So he was 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. He was 24 years old and was handed one of the most lucrative contract ever.
How dare you? Yeah.
Because he is somebody that you will never see again, the likes of which you will never. I mean, obviously we've got Mike Trout now, who's making a good case for it, but he is a once in a generation player. He was that, I guess you got to give the steroid era to Barry Bonds. So is that little lull between the end of the steroid era and now the resurgence with the retiring of A-Rod, the resurgence of home runs and offense a little bit in the MLB, if we want to call that, I don't know, 99 to 2015, that's A-Rod's generation?
Yeah, see, that's a tough thing, because I think you still really have a lot of the steroid stuff going on until like 2003, or you know what
right.
I mean? Because like, Barry doesn't even start taking them, I mean, hypothetically, until like 1998, 99.
Oh, yeah.
For him. So there's like a weird like in-between period there where I don't know how you...
Because
you got Pujols in there. Like, if we say like, maybe we say like 2004 or 5 till, you know...
Okay, yeah, I'll buy that.
His, 10 or
so
something,
his Yankees,
I mean?
Like, tenure, basically his Yankees
right,
tenure.
Right, 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 right. Yeah, like, I don't know. I maybe. Maybe a Pujols would probably be the first one you would think of.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, Ortiz is in there too. There's a few other guys.
Listen, all I know is in 2007, A-Rod slugged .645.
That's not bad.
Okay? I mean, 420 with a 422 OBP, usually, again, when I'm playing a video game and I see a guy with an OPS over 1, like midway through the season, I'm like, okay, something's wrong. Somebody's doing, this is too good. This guy shouldn't be this good. But that was A-Rod. And it seems that a lot of people are just, are maybe not. It's bittersweet, I think, the tone of it now, but I think it should be a lot more bitter than it is sweet, because this is one of the greatest baseball careers ever, and it's ending. And he had a Yankees teammate similarly announce his retirement, Mark Teixeira. Rich, where does Mark Teixeira just... We didn't do the research. I'm not, you know, not...
Yeah,
saying
no, I
should.
Actually looked at this. No,
okay,
I actually looked
where
at that.
Is
yeah,
he for you?
He's not a Hall of Famer.
Not a Hall of Famer, but...
No, you, if you put him in there, you got a lot of other guys in
mm-hmm.
there.
One of the better, does he get it done for you as a switch hitter? One of the best switch hitters of all time?
People mention that. You know, I think 400 home runs as a switch hitter, maybe the most. I forgot if it was the most all time. It's up there. No, I just, he's fine, but yeah, I don't know if he's
okay.
quite.
Well, right, right. Not Hall of Fame, but he was, again, a really good player who was good for a longer while. And it's coming to an end now. I remember those years with the Angels. He was the guy to have. Damn. Well,
I think you mean the Rangers. Yeah, I think he had 1 year in the Angels, didn't he?
I thought he was big with the Angels.
Was he a perennial? I don't know if he was. I don't remember.
I can never spell Teixeira right. I'm just letting it.
Yeah, no, you're gonna spell it wrong. It's just gonna come up anyway. Uh-huh. I think he only played.
Did he?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he only played 1 year in it.
Let me see.
I think he did Texas, then he did like a weird year in Atlanta, and then
oh wow,
LA,
only 1 year with the Angels. Oh, that's right. I do mean Texas. Why am I centering on him with the Angels?
I don't know. You liked his 2008 season. I mean, he was very good. He had a,
it was only 54 games though.
Yeah, I know.
That's weird.
He had 358 in those games, so I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You're a big fan of your 2008 Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Well, that was the year we started 6-4-3 Sports. That's probably why.
That's probably why you always make that connection there. You loved it. You loved your Torrey Hunter on the Angels era. So Sean Figgins is one of your favorite players of all time. So I get it. That's fine.
If you're the Angels now, are you trying to get better, Rich, or are you trading Mike Trout and just starting over?
Oh, people always bring that up. I would not trade Mike Trout. I know that you can just like completely reinvigorate your entire farm system, and their farm system's terrible and all that sort of stuff. But it's like, you can, you know what I mean? Like, how do you sell
that? You can't be the GM that traded away.
Yes, in a vacuum, yes. If these guys were just commodities that you were trading on a stock market, yes, you would. But like, you gotta like report. Like, you cannot be like, hey guys, we traded Mike Trout. Like, no one's gonna like let you do that. Like, you're gonna get grilled, even if it's the right move. Like, you just cannot be that guy to do that, because he's gonna be good for a bunch more years. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's true. You can't do that. Like, it's a business. It's still a business.
Right.
And you cannot sell that to your stockholders as, yeah, but look at these like unnamed possible commodities we have now. And it's like, no, man, you right. can't trade.
We got
out.
Six top 50 prospects. So
maybe two of them will be good. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's like, you can't
God,
sell that'd
have to be a three team trade, too. Like, you could, there's no one team that has enough to get Mike Trout.
It's just going
to
pour out their entire farces. Mm-hmm. Like, here, take it all. We don't want it. Like,
I might, if you look at Mike Trout, I would. And that probably wouldn't be enough. So, Rich, you want to talk Olympics a little bit?
Basically, this isn't a topic where I wanted to be like, hey, let's break down water polo, or hey, let's talk about the equestrian.
Then why did I DVR it?
I've been watching equestrian games all morning. Damn it.
I watched that girl play sand volleyball in her hijab and long sleeves and a sweater for no reason. Yeah.
Sorry. I apologize. But what I wanted to talk about is, because I enjoy all this stuff that we're talking about. Like, for me, like, I can't wait till I'm done talking to you so I can go watch whatever stupid sport is on right now. Like, I love it.
Well,
I
can always not wait to be done talking to me.
Oh, I know. But in this case, I really cannot wait. Right. Then otherwise I just, like, get depressed and go play video games or something like that. And that's still a better reality than talking to you. But
yeah, well,
in this case, like, there's joy at the end of this horrible tunnel that I'm running through. But where was
such
I?
An
oh,
ass.
Right. I apologize.
No.
I love doing this.
No,
shit.
Wear it. It's okay.
It's all right.
It's all right. I was going to get you a nice microphone for your housewarming party, but I guess not. That's
come and gone. So then, you know.
Yeah, but I was going to do it anyway, but I guess not. Now that.
No, I don't want it.
Yeah. Pff, I don't want to give it to you.
You talk to me more. I don't want to. Like, the mic doesn't work today, John. Sorry, I can't talk.
Yeah,
like,
I don't want to.
USB, it's all kind of weird. Yeah, you know,
like, all the time. Like, oh, it's Source Connect. I don't know how it's working. Whatever. The internet's down. Like, you're talking to me over the internet. I don't know.
It's weird. Yeah, I got the hell out of here. But I love the Olympics. I enjoy watching them. But I have trouble, and I'm posing this question to you and our listeners. Should I have an issue with the fact that I love the Olympics and I enjoy watching the Olympics? I love the ceremony. I love the Olympics. It's one of my favorite times. Every time it comes around, winter, summer, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I hate the Olympics because the organization that runs the Olympics is the absolute fucking worst organization in the world, the IOC.
Mm-hmm.
Like a legit, like, crimes against humanity organization. Like, legitimately, like, off, like, mm-hmm. top tier awful, like not like, like a movie level awful of how they what they do to cities, how they use money, how they appropriate funds, how they allow people to use slaves, how they just don't care about murder, don't care about human atrocity. Like that company runs this Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they're awful, and I know they're awful, and I hate them, and they're the worst, but I like the Olympics.
Okay.
And they destroy cities. They come in, they say, build all this shit for us, build us an arena so I can watch this, so these idiots in America can watch this, these stupid sports, and then we're all going to leave, and you're stuck in your saddle with this stuff and tax money forever. And it's awful, and I hate it, but I love the Olympics.
Okay.
Is that okay? Should I have problems with that, or should I be able to? Because you talked last week about compartmentalizing, or a few weeks ago, about the differences between stuff that you can sort of like something, but at the same time understand it's awful, or you know, like, I have trouble with the Olympics though, because I love it, but I don't know.
I if you enjoy the pageantry and you enjoy the competition and you enjoy watching perhaps not the best at what they do. It's weird because everybody thinks of the Olympics as like the greatest competitors facing each other, but it's really not. I mean, there's some countries there that probably shouldn't be there. And a lot of the athletes you're watching aren't the best in the world at what they do. The best are usually concentrated in private teams and professional organizations. But if you like the nationalism it inspires in you, if you like looking at the medal count every night after a day's competition and going, oh man, I hope the USA caught up on China today. Sure. There's absolutely no problem with it. I would say the problem I would have, it's not my place to have a problem with what you like. And I think that's something, that's a mantra everybody should apply, is that it's not my place to have a problem with you for something you like, unless it's something egregious, like something that's illegal.
Right. I like murdering people. You're like,
I don't think we want to hang out. Like, come on, dude. No, I just want to murder one person. Like, no, I don't.
Yeah, you have to let me do that. You're like, no,
I'm gonna go over here. I would say if you were spending money on it, you're giving it TV ratings, but you know, we live in I'm a pragmatist more often than not, and you watching or not watching, even you and me not watching or not watching, or everybody who listens to this podcast, or everybody who's listened to this podcast, everybody who's ever subscribed to my YouTube channel, if everybody didn't watch it, nothing would change. Absolutely nothing would change. I would say that you would find yourself in a bigger quandary if you bought, you know, you spent $2,500 on a ticket package and you were going to Rio and you were like, oh man, I'm going to go see fencing and then I'm going to go see volleyball and then I got a basketball game. It's going to be Uganda against Senegal, but you know, it's okay because it's the Olympics. If you were going all out, balls out, spending money, real money and sacrificing tangible assets for this product, I think your moral dilemma would be bigger and more real. But I don't think you should. It's fine. You can identify the IOC as an evil organization. Like you said, like from a movie, it's like from a bad movie, they are that evil organization. But you've identified it. And if you can, the problem people run into is where they can't identify it. They can't say, oh, okay, so I know how to not cross that boundary. They don't know, because a lot of people want to say, oh yeah, I won't support the NFL if they support women beaters, or if they lie about the pink jerseys or whatever. I won't support that. I don't like it, but I still like football. But then what are you doing buying tickets to go to the games, getting on the season ticket waiting list, spending $500 at NFL.com every other week on new sweatshirts and hoodies and stuff? Well, wait a minute, you've kind of lost that standing to say, well, I'm still pretty pissed about this. No, where you're at, it's fine. I mean, you've identified it, and you know where to draw the line. I'm assuming there is a line at which you would be like, okay, no way. Now I am supporting Dr. Evil, and I can't do that.
Yeah, maybe if like in the opening ceremony, they just like got a bunch of slaves together, like lit them on fire, and were like, all right, like
right,
IOC baby. Like,
but is there also a point where if you're sitting in the stands at a game and you've traveled there and you've partaken of all of
you're
it?
Like, I kind of got to watch the whole rest of this, right, this whole thing, don't I?
Yeah, like, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing this, but you're watching it on TV and you enjoy it and it's meant to be enjoyed. That's the reason for all the pageantry. No, it's not a problem at all. You have I would say the doctor is in, you have a healthy outlook on things. And as long as you can keep it in your mind that, oh yeah, the IOC is like a real bunch of bad dudes, so maybe I shouldn't really support them with my money, and you don't. And that's cool, right? I don't see a problem with that.
Okay. All right. Good. Because I always feel bad. Because like no. I watch the. Do you get HBO?
Yes.
Watch. Have you watched The Real Sports on the IOC?
No, I have. I've heard so many people talk about it. And
you absolutely should do it. Right. It's on demand. You absolutely should do it.
All right.
You will. You'll be a better person for it. It's like an hour and a half, but you'll just be enthralled because it's just like, oh my. Like,
right. I've heard people say that. The people are like, oh yeah, I knew the IOC was bad, but then I watched it, and oh my God, they're basically killing people.
I think that didn't help. I think maybe before I watched that, I would have been like, you know, they're not great, but you know, who's great? Everyone. And then I watched that, and I was like, oh no,
they're actually evil.
They're like Scorpio from the Simpsons or whatever, you know what I mean, where it's like everything looks all shiny and nice and you get down to the trench, uh-huh, and it's just a mess. Yeah, like it's
yeah, well, I was at the 96 Olympics though. I was there.
Were you the bomber or no?
No, don't think so.
Okay. You had nothing to do with the bomber.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the first guy they fingered died from stress because of the allegations, but he was just the security guard that found the bomb and was trying to get people to run away from it. But then the FBI, mm-hmm, was like, you did it. And then he had a heart attack and died. But then I think they've since caught the real guy. I think they got the real guy that all did right. it.
So it wasn't you. Okay, no. Good. But yeah, no, I don't want the Olympics to be in my city because, like, and that's the other thing too. Like, everybody was like, oh, you don't want the Olympics in Chicago? I'm like, I love watching the Olympics, but hell no, I don't want the Olympics in my city because all it does is just suck your mm-hmm. city dry and then bounce and go, hey, enjoy your, like, velodrome that you're never going to use again. Right. Or, like, Or like Greece, that's like, because that's in that real sports piece. They go to the Greece's like baseball stadium and it's like in disarray, like they don't use it. And they ask like the Greek guy, they're like, do you guys play baseball? He's like, no, we don't play baseball. Like, what the hell do we need a baseball stadium for? And they just have a baseball stadium. It just sits there. It does nothing. It
yeah, but in the beginning, in the bids, they'll be turned into multi-use stadiums. And,
right. And then they just rot. And then they just sit there.
And
so
then they really don't. No, it's, look, because it really is that, if you're going to consume some major sporting event, odds are there's a lot of dickheads at the helm of it.
Always a good thing to remember, too. Yes,
it's bad people doing bad things and faceless corporations that are, you know, chasing the mighty dollar, and they don't care who gets in their way or how or when or why. And no, they don't really care about beaten women or beaten children. They don't, because they care about, like, how much they can charge through DirecTV for NFL Sunday Ticket. They don't care about Adrian Peterson's kid. They have to care. They have to look like they care so that you'll get off their back about it. But they really don't. And if you root for anything, you know, MLB, they don't care about steroids. NHL, they really don't care about their players beating people or being drunks or the sexual abuse that goes on in the junior hockey ranks. The NFL, they don't care about concussions or the health of their players. Name any sport you want, they don't care. They just care about money. And you got to have something to root for. You got to have something to watch to just go, okay, I can just watch this and I enjoy it and it doesn't bother me. Because it's an escape, it's entertainment. As long as you're not directly supporting it and then still saying, well, wow, how could they? I don't think it's a problem.
Okay.
No problem at all. Good. All right.
Thank you.
Do we want to talk about Joey Bosa? We'll wrap it up here. It's been a good,
we talked a lot.
Almost an hour and a half of talk there. I
Chargers, just sign him. Like, come on. What
stop
are you doing?
Stop crying about offset money. Stop it. The first Jared Goff and the number 5 pick, I forget who it was. Let's see, where is it? Jalen Ramsey, both of them got their bonuses up front in full and no offset language. Just why are you being such dickheads about this? And reports are, people close to it are saying that that Joey Bosa, he will take one of offset language or deferred bonus payments, but he can't take both or won't take both. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable position. So stop being jag holes. I mean, really, is your cap situation that bad? It can't be.
I think they're just being dickheads, and I don't know why. I think they're just trying to prove their power over a player and that we can do this and you can't stop us, but it's just like...
Yeah, well, and that's a...
You're a bad person. You're bad people.
That's a big problem, too, that's going to need to be addressed in the next CBA, is how much control, like, do NFL really teams really have with their contract terms and what they can do. They can say, go ahead, we're not going to... Where are you going to go? Because where's Joey Bosa going to go?
He can't do anything. He's got to sit out 2 years. Is basically what he can do. I think it said something like he can maybe at the end of the 2017 season do so. Like, so yeah, he's basically just got to.
Yeah. And the other thing is that everybody kind of conveniently forgets that Eli Manning did this. He was
with the Chargers. Yeah. He said, I'm not going to the Chargers.
They drafted him. He's like, no. Archie's like, no. He's not playing for you. Negotiate a trade. And they're like, oh, fine. Okay. We'll do that. But I don't. Who's their owner? Is he a known D-bag?
I have no idea. Yeah, I don't know.
It's a stupid thing because Joey Bosa is probably going to help your team out, a team that needs defensive help, and you're getting in a pissing contest with him, which if he turns out to be a preternatural talent, if he turns out to be a really, really good player, is Joey Bosa going to want to sign with you? Is he going to want to sign a contract extension? He's going to want out. He's going to want to go replace the 3-fingered Jason Pierre-Paul or wherever he's going to be. So it seems like a stupid hill to die on. But you know what? I'm not an NFL owner, and you know they act all weird in their little echo chamber of footballiness. You can't talk about what happened at training camp because we got to have control over what information is let out of training camp. By you can't tweet pictures of us running plays. Like, okay, whatever, bunch of weirdos. Anyway, this has been a great episode of the KMP Show. We thank you all for listening. Be sure to subscribe to the KMP Show at kandpshow.com. Search KMP Show wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe there. You can follow the show on Twitter at KANDP Show. You can also follow me on Twitter at John's Voices. Be sure to check out the rest of the podcast and the great Voices of Wrestling podcasting network at voicesofwrestling.com. And you can follow them on Twitter at Voices Wrestling. Of course, go to MacWeldon.com and get 20% off your order using our promo code and your promo code KP. 20% off at MacWeldon.com. Use our promo code KP. For Rich Craich, I'm John Playtech. Thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you next time. We are out. Bye.